As a homeschooling mother of five, I'm so tired of the network's liberal slant, even in the fair and balanced news, that I really enjoy listening to Bob Enyart present current events from a biblical perspective. For example, Daniel obeyed God, even as a government official. So what should we and our Christian leaders learn from that? Please support Bob Enyart Live, spread the word, and consider ordering Bob's great Bible materials, available online at kgov.com, where you can also listen to his program, like I do, at the most convenient time for you. That's at kgov.com. Enjoy!
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and welcome to another edition of Real Science Friday.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
All right, Fred, great to have you back. Fred is also the webmaster for their journal of the Creation Research Society.
The Creation Research Quarterly.
That's right, CRSQ. And we are going through their most recent edition, December 2006, and we've been having fun talking about these excellent articles. So, Fred, if we could dig right in, start right now, there is this article about baraminology. What in the world is baraminology?
Basically, the science looking at created kinds, so categorizing organisms as created kinds instead of the traditional taxonomic system that Leonis had come up with that is used by the secular scientists. So this kind of...
let me see. That was when you take plants and animals, you say there's the plant kingdom and the animal kingdom. Kingdom, phylum, class.
The canine family and then the dog species. Mm-hmm. So that's the taxonomic classification system.
Yeah.
And baraminology is also a classification system, but it's based off of the biblical kind.
The biblical concept that God created animals and plants after their kind. And that's how they reproduce after their kind. So the secular world, they use the system of kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, and species, right? And in fact, that was created by a creationist.
Yeah, Linus was a creationist.
Yeah. And,
this wasn't a system. At one time, they believed in fixation of the species. So in other words, the species were the created kind.
Right.
But over time, they realized, Linus himself, that there was some variability where a species, you could have like two different kinds of canine species, but they're really still the same created kind.
Like a wolf and a German shepherd.
Exactly.
And they could reproduce.
That's right. And so one of the things that kind of came to my mind when I saw this article is one of the most common straw man arguments that evolutionists use against Christians, not just creationists, but Christians, is how did Noah get all those animals on the ark? How did they get millions upon millions of species
millions
of animals
of species.
On the ark?
Right.
And so the creationist argument is that you wouldn't need to take all the different species of animals on the ark. The Bible talked about created kinds. So you wouldn't need to take all the different types of dogs. You really only need one dog kind on the ark. And from what we've learned from genetics, we know that the wolf and the dog are related. They can actually interbreed. So you would only need one canine kind that could produce dogs, wolves, coyotes, and rapidly. We've learned that this kind of diversification over a continent can occur very rapidly. We've seen that with the jackrabbit species in Australia. Mm-hmm. So the point is, you do not need to take species on the ark. You need to take created kinds. And from the dimensions of the ark of the Bible and the amount of kinds we would need to populate the earth, creation scientists have estimated about 15% of the ark would be needed for all the animals you would need. And so all the rest of the space could be used for food or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So the estimate was 13,000 created kinds, Bob. So that would cover
13,
all the animal life that populated the earth.
Because there's supposedly about a million species or so. It's hard to quantify that. But many of those species are insects and fish. And the fish, of course, were not brought onto the ark. And plants, the seeds of plants would float, and so the earth would basically replant itself after the flood. the settling of the floodwaters. So it was land, animals, and birds, everything with the breath of life in them, with lungs. That's what Noah brought onto the ark.
That's right. Another example is there's like 17 North American jackrabbit species. And the only reason they're categorized as different species is because they can no longer interbreed. Well, that's due to what's called allopatric speciation, where populations become isolated, separated from each other. So that over time, they develop different mating habits, so they don't readily interbreed with each other. Mm-hmm. But guess what they find out, Bob, when they actually put these groups together?
They breed.
Over time, they'll figure it out. Yeah. And the bottom line is they're still rabbits. You do not need to take all those 17 different kinds of rabbits on the ark. You only need one rabbit kind.
Well, how about when animals breed together that we really normally would not think of them breeding, like a tiger and a lion? They have been bred together.
That's right. And it's depending on which direction it occurs, which is the father. It's either a tigon or a liger.
Wow, a tigon or a liger. And what other animals have they bred together that are not expected or surprising?
Well, people are surprised to hear that camels and llamas can actually interbreed.
Llamas?
Yeah, llamas.
Okay, they'd probably say llama down in South America.
Yeah, the Spanish.
Camels and llamas are bred together?
They are bred. They can breed together.
What do they call that thing?
What would you guess?
A lammel?
That's what most people guess, Bobby, when I give my creation talk, but it's actually called a comma. Spelled C-A-M-A.
Oh, wait, a comma?
A comma.
That's pretty funny. Hey, wait, if that's a comma, let me think about this for a second. A hyena. What would you call it if you bred a hyena and a dolphin? I think you'd get a hyphen. Hey, if you could have a comma, I can have a hyphen.
You can have your hyphen. Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because actually, they've found recently, this is in the last 5 years, that whales and dolphins actually interbreed, and they call that a wolfin. So you weren't too far from the hyphen. It wasn't the hyena.
Okay. Whales and dolphins breed. And it's so funny how evolutionists say life began in the sea, and you had fish, and then the fish came out of the sea on the surf. You know, they started hanging out on the beach and grew legs, became mammals, reptiles, mammals, amphibians, whatever, and then became cows. And then the cows went back to the beach, started swimming in the surf, and evolved into whales. I mean, this is all just too bizarre.
Oh, yeah. You know, God's got a great sense of humor that he put a mammal back in the ocean because he knew man would come up with a silly idea that fish evolved into amphibians. Amphibians became land creatures. Well, evolutionists had a serious problem because God dropped a mammal right back in the water. So somehow they had to come up with this idea that a wolf-like creature, the Masonic chid, I don't even know if you remember, that's what they called this thing, that somehow over time, it got closer to the water, somehow, and, it's all just stories and make-believe about how this thing eventually decided to want to get back in the water, and over time it became a whale and had sonar capability and all the other fantastic design of a whale to be able to go down rapidly and not get the bends. I mean, all these incredible designs of this creature, yet it all happened because evolution, says that it happened. So
it's such a funny.
It's a fairy tale.
Okay, now, so baraminology is the study of the classification of living creatures. And it turns out in this order of species, genus, family, order, class, phylum, kingdom, that this author, Todd Wood, believes that when the Bible says that God created them after their kind, that was at the level of which level?
The family level is where it seemed to reside. The family.
That's the third one up from the bottom.
The third one up.
Species, genus,
and family. That's right.
Genus, family. So that when we look at what we call species and then we get surprised, oh, look, these creatures we thought could not breed together, they can breed together. They can reproduce after their kind. And so that's the animals that Noah would have brought onto the ark.
That's right.
Okay. And that's a manageable number of animals. Also, if evolution were true and God didn't create after their kind, then you wouldn't expect to find such well-defined boundaries. You'd expect that you'd have transitional stages everywhere. Life would be one continuous blur, without dramatic differentiation.
That's right. So this is also called discontinuity systematics. It's a term Walter Remine coined.
Mm-hmm. Discontinuity, because that's what we find between families of living creatures.
Exactly.
Okay, that's pretty cool. So that does help us better understand also the world around us. When we look at life and we try to categorize it, we can realize that just the ability to catalog living creatures is evidence for a creator and against evolution. Just that ability right there.
That's right. And again, it refutes the straw man argument about taking millions of species on the ark. I don't know how many times I hear that one.
Right, right. Okay, and by the way, Fred, I want to let the audience know, you do present. You're a creation speaker. You've spoke at churches and schools all around Colorado. Have you gone outside of the state ever?
Yeah, a couple of times. A National Youth Conference in Utah,
okay.
And I've talked at a...
And you have a great website, evolutionfairytale.com, and your presentation slides is excellent. So if somebody would like to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
They can either go to my website, evolutionfairytale.com. I'm also a speaker for Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship, and their website is youngearth.org, and also denvercreation.org will also take you there.
Youngearth.org. Okay, that sounds great. So now the next article here is actually another book review, and it's a book titled Buried Alive by Jack Kuzo, and it's about Neanderthal, depending on where you're coming from.
That's right, and this is a book I read several years ago, and Jack Kuzo is a dentist by trade, and so he's an expert in that field. What's interesting about this book, it's real exciting. The first two chapters is like reading a novel. When he went to France, he was met with a lot of resistance in trying to look at the evidence for Neanderthals.
He wanted to study these things.
That's right.
Because he's a dentist, and a lot of the evidence is in their dental work, their teeth.
And he actually claims in the book that he really felt that even one time his life was threatened. So he documents this all in the first two chapters, kind of a few car chases, believe it or not. And this guy doesn't come across. I've seen him on talk shows. Mm-hmm. It's some sensationalist. I really believe this happened because France really protects their religion of evolution like you wouldn't believe. I mean, what is it, Bob? I've heard that they're like 90% atheist. I don't know if that's true, but I know it's real high.
Well, Europe generally is so post-Christian, it's real tragic. But in France, especially so. So, okay, so he writes in, he is giving the argument what evolutionists want to do. When they get a fossil and it's a human being, they want to say it's an ape. And when they get a fossil that's an ape, they want to say it's becoming a human being. So they like to blur the distinction between animals and man.
Yeah, and some of the features of Neanderthal, he showed some pretty good evidence that that there are slower growth rates in the past that showed some of the features of Neanderthals. The book actually gets pretty technical. Mm-hmm. Once you
After
get into the details.
Exciting chapters.
But he really gets the point across really well. It's a book I'd recommend. It's another perspective on what's going on with the Neanderthal adult skulls that appear to be more developed than modern skulls.
Hmm. All right. And we talked in our last episode, I believe, when we were going through a review of a book by Hugh Ross, that the arguments used to say Neanderthal were not human. A lot of those arguments have just been decimated, even by evolutionary scientists.
Yeah, there's plenty of evolutionists that actually classify Neanderthal as Homo sapien.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So in the evolutionists, they want to take fossils or bones of a human being and say, oh, look, here's an ape. And they want to take fossils of apes and say, this is a hominid. This is an ape that's becoming a human.
Yep.
Okay. So we know their gig. We know what's up.
That's right. Their gig is up.
The gig is up. Okay, the next article in Creation Research Society Quarterly is by Jonathan Henry, and it's about this idea of did death occur before the fall? When Adam and Eve sinned in the garden, that was the fall that brought destruction to the cosmos. Well, the old Earth creationists say that life on Earth had been going on for eons before Adam and Eve sinned in the garden. So what would that imply? If Hugh Ross and these old Earth creationists are correct, what would that mean if there was death before Adam and Eve?
Well, they believe that there's millions and millions and millions of years of death, disease, and suffering, yet the Bible makes it real clear that death came into the world as a result of man's sin. I've found over the years, Bob, that not just from my own experience, but from talking to other creation speakers, one of the best arguments we have against a fellow Christian who believes in an old earth is this death before sin problem, because it is so clear in the Bible that there was no death before sin. When God was creating after day six, he said everything was very good. And if you look at the Hebrew, I mean, it really paints a picture of paradise. So what's a paradise if you've had already millions and millions of years of disease, suffering, cancer, and we find cancer in the fossil record? So our argument is death came to the world as a result of sin, and the fossil record is a leftover of the flood, really a picture of God's judgment of sin. Mm-hmm. But it's not a picture of millions and millions of years of going back, of all this suffering and dying. That's not the God of the Bible. The God of the Bible is a God who grieves at death.
Right, so that with animals, we see all the suffering and the horrendous violence in the fossil record, and we realize, coming from a biblical worldview, that that all happened after death entered into the cosmos through Adam and Eve. That when God finished creating at Genesis 1, he said, it's good, it's good, it's good. And at the end, he said, it is very good. And so that's not where animals are tearing one another apart and eating another animal while that animal is still alive and suffering. That's all part of the post-fall destruction that's come in when we destroyed our paradise.
Just like the New Testament says several places in Romans,
yeah,
and
Romans,
that by sin came death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, death entered the cosmos.
Death entered
and
the
so
through
all
man's
died.
Sin.
Right.
Yeah.
The point is that God created a perfect cosmos, a perfect paradise, and Adam and Eve sinned, and that broke the cosmos. So now the whole creation is groaning and suffering.
That's right.
The whole creation from Romans 8. So that the creation was not groaning and suffering before the fall, but after the fall. So Hugh Ross, he's the head of this group, Reasons to Believe. He's a Christian who says the Big Bang is true, and he believes that there was life on Earth for eons before Adam and Eve. So he's what we call a progressive creationist, an old Earth creationist, and we, of course, reject that as being unbiblical.
That's right. Paul called death the last enemy in 1 Corinthians 15, and this is mentioned in this article.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that I always use in my talks, and he mentions it here, is the shortest verse in the Bible most people know is Jesus wept. If you think of that story, it was the death of Lazarus that he ended up raising from the dead. Well, God, Jesus knows he's God. He's going to raise him from the dead. We submit that he wept because of death. Mm-hmm. Death is an enemy to God, and he said death will be done away with. And he'll wipe away all our tears, and death and suffering will be long gone. Mm. So death is a temporary part of history in a biblical framework. Now, in an evolutionary framework, death is a permanent part
of
history.
It goes on for billions
of
years.
It's been here for millions of years. It's here now, and it'll go on. It'll be here with us until the end of time.
And here's the reason why God made the cosmos and this ecosystem where he put Adam and Eve in the center of it. Here's the reason it was all interconnected. Because if Adam and Eve sinned, and yet the earth remained as a paradise, and they wouldn't have to work and sweat to produce their livelihood, then that would destroy them further. Because when sinful human beings win the lottery, they tend to divorce, marriages break up, because they hate one another, and they no longer need one another. When somebody, some garage rock band, they hit it big, and they're now multimillionaires in Hollywood, they end up hating one another and breaking up because people need one another to overcome our sin. And when you win the lottery, then you don't need each other. And so if the earth was a perfect paradise and it gave us our total livelihood, then we wouldn't need one another in our relationships. Our marriages wouldn't survive. So God was wise. He said, I can't take sinful people and give everyone the winning lottery ticket.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Bob.
Yeah, and so when Adam and Eve sinned, the cosmos broke. It cursed the ground, thorns and thistles. We would have to sweat with the toil and the sweat of our brow in order to survive. Therefore, we need one another.
Yes, and so what progressive creationists are doing is they're compromising with the world. They want to fit this secular idea of billions of years into the Bible. And so this author of this article just refutes claim after claim that Hugh Ross tries to make using the Bible. And
one now, that, Hugh Ross makes funny claims.
Oh, he does. And this one, I mean, it's just plain dumb, Bob. Oh, I'm sorry. It's a little harsh. Right. But,
that's a little harsh.
Well,
here,
well, I think when the audience
let's
hears
see.
One
let's
of the things.
It.
Yeah, let's see if it. Well, let's do a test of dumbness.
Okay. All right.
So Ross claimed, and he claimed this in 2004, that plants, when eaten or harvested, experience bleeding, bruising, scarring, and death.
Okay. So Hugh Ross hears us young earth creationists, and we say that old earth creationism is false because then you would have had death and suffering, violence, before the fall. So we say that can't be because you can't have a world filled with death, suffering, and violence before the fall, and we point to the fossil record of the animals that died with, you know, in horrendous ways.
Yeah, so Hugh Ross says, oh, wait a minute now. Weren't humans
plants?
Asked to eat, weren't they given a mandate that the plants of the earth were for, to be food to man? And so, so you're killing things before man's fall. But
right.
Wait a minute. Do plants have a soul, Bob? Do they have a spirit?
Plants don't have a soul. They don't have a spirit. And so it's so for plants to be killed in the process of making bread, this is okay because the plants are not going to suffer. He says plants experience bleeding, bruising, scarring, and death. That just goes too far because they don't have a soul.
Yeah, it sounds like, like a fairy tale, like a VeggieTales gone mad, you know, I'm getting killed.
Yeah, right. And so we did that, you know, with the animal rights activists on the TV show years ago. I used to take a tomato and I'd say, you know, we have animal rights, we have plant rights. This tomato has a right to live. And then I murdered the tomato on the air. I murdered it. I stabbed it. And it was suffering.
By the way, I hear your TV shows are now available to the audience. That is awesome.
They're backed by subscription only, the BEL Televised Classics. And people have been subscribing to these all over the country. And they
highly recommend them.
4, 8, or 16 shows a month delivered by the mailman on DVD. And you could call us or go to our website, kgov.com, or call us at 800-8-NYART, 800-836-9278. And by the way, if somebody subscribed to the BEL Televised Classics in the next week, we will give them for free a subscription, a one-year subscription to this journal, the Creation Research Society Quarterly. And that's quite a deal right there. This is a fabulous resource to have come to your house.
Oh, definitely.
Once a quarter. Okay, so last point I'd like to make. So Hugh Ross makes the silly statement that, look, there was death before the fall because Adam and Eve ate plants.
That's right. And then Jonathan Sarfati, who's a famous creationist, well-known, he's a world-class chess player. I was at a conference, and he played five guys blindfolded backwards, and he smoked them all. But anyways, he's amazing.
Cool.
But he wrote in his book, Refuting Compromise, he wrote that the claim is baseless, for plants have no brain to interpret tissue damage as pain. Now, when I mentioned that to you, Bob, before the show, I was really surprised you thought it was that Sarfati's comment is...
He was making a concession to materialists.
And I'm like, really? How's that? I'm like, oh, come on, Bob.
Sarfati, he's a creationist. He's a Christian. But he said that plants have no brain to interpret tissue damage as pain. Therefore, Hugh Ross's argument is silly. Well, he's correct, except he went too far. It's not our brain that interprets tissue damage as pain. Pain is not physical. Pain is awareness. Like reason is not physical. Reason, logic, the laws of logic are not physical. So atoms and molecules, they cannot reason. They're not self-aware. They can't understand anything. And so a tree cannot sense pain. Not because it doesn't have a brain, but because it doesn't have a soul spirit.
Yeah, it's just like you gave the example to me earlier that a computer, or let's say a chess program, can't know that he's a chess program.
Right. It doesn't even know what chess is.
Yeah, exactly.
It just doesn't know. And so because they can't be aware. So your brain is made of atoms and molecules. Your brain is not self-aware. It's your soul spirit. Because we are made in God's image and likeness. We are body, soul, and spirit. And so my brain is not where I sense pain. Because when they operate on the brain, they do brain operations, they keep the patient awake. And they don't even need to give local anesthesia because the brain does not sense pain. They cut into the brain, they remove sections, there's no feeling of pain. So the brain is the one organ that can't feel pain. And the atheist says, oh, we feel our pain in our brain. That's not true. Pain is awareness, just like the use of logic and reason, awareness, knowledge. These are not physical things. These are specifically non-physical. So a plant cannot feel pain because a plant has no soul and no spirit. That's why a plant cannot feel pain. But anyway, it's
interesting. That was interesting. It was
It's an unnecessary
perspective.
Unnecessary concession to materialists, as though our brain can reason.
Exactly. It's amazing how certain things have an illusion behind them that you just don't see, that we can still to this day not recognize those kind of things.
Yeah. Fred, we're running out of time, and I want to let people know about next week. They could call in or email us. So instead of talking about the next two articles, let's just mention there are book reviews of Ann Coulter's book, Godless, The Church of Liberalism.
Yeah, that was a really good book, and I know you interviewed her for your show.
We had Ann Coulter on the show a couple times, a few times now, and we interviewed her for this book. And she has a whole section in the book against evolution. And this is a very popular book, so that helps.
It does help. And Dwayne Gish was one of the reviewers. People know who Dwayne Gish is. He's 84 years old. He's one of the
famous creationists.
Yeah, probably in the top three famous creationists. Yeah. He's been defending the creation argument, the Bible, for literally decades. And great guy. I've met him personally. And he really had a lot of good things to say about what she wrote in the section on creation and evolution. I also read the book, and her coverage of it was very good. It's nothing new, but it's pretty much the and she used a lot of the arguments from the intelligent design movement, but all was presented in a very good fashion.
Yeah, and she's witty. She's as funny as could be, and we're almost out of time.
Okay.
But Fred, the next article, we can't even talk about it, just to say the title of it. Charles Darwin's Faulty Scholarship, a review. This guy, Jerry Bergman, he tears Darwin apart and shows so many examples of his fraud, his being unethical, his sloppy work. We make him into a brilliant scientist. This is embarrassing stuff.
It is. And a lot of it, again, is not just coming from creationists. These are quotes from evolutionists who recognize some of the stuff he does is downright fraudulent. He wrote a really silly book, I know we're running out of time, called The Expression of the Emotions of Man and Animals. And so he was trying to say, well, since man evolved from animals, we got the same expressions. So you see these goofy pictures in his book of this woman with a sneer on her face.
Right. And he made people to look like animals.
And he doctored the pictures. And he had one guy that was hooked up to electrodes and said, this is what it looks like to have the expression of horror.
Right.
But the way they manipulated the faces to try to make it look like an animal horror is just silly.
Yeah, it was all silly. And it was Darwinism.
Exactly.
Okay, Fred, next week for our next edition of Real Science Friday, you came up with the idea, let's have, instead of going through the quarterly, let's have calls and emails from the audience to Real Science Friday. That'll be great. Okay. So on our website, could I link the email for evolutionfairytale.com?
Sure.
So why don't you give us that email?
Oh, for the evolutionfairytale.com?
Yeah.
Fred@evolutionfairytale.com.
Okay. Now, that's really complicated, Fred. I don't know if I can remember that, but Fred@evolutionfairytale.com.
T-A-L-E.
T-A-L-E.
Yeah.
Okay. And to let people know again, if you would like to read, you'd like to get your own subscription to Creation Research Society Quarterly, call us up at Bob and Harriet Live or go to our web store at kgov.com. If you order our BEL Science Pack or any subscription, we will give you a gift, an annual subscription to CRSQ. Maranatha Christian Center, great school, right?
I love it. My kids, Ryan and Abby, go there, and it's a great Christian school.
God bless you all.